I think
Look
for the
at that
pets.
name flash up on a bunch.
Oh,
Hi, Kev. Happy Monday.
hello.
Happy Monday.
Monday. Guys, I made a
What?
discovery today, and I just want to tell you, as a
What's
woman
your
with a
discovery?
plan and a taste for espresso, you know, maybe you know that lemon is one of the best flavors with espresso.
I did not know
I didn't know
that.
that. Yeah. So I am adding some lemon vodka to a cherry Coke water, cherry Coke water. And then I'll be able to have a shot of this to finish before I switch to iced coffee. Then I don't have to go from Coke to coffee, which
I
is
mean,
gross.
it's
Problem solved.
what a thinker, really. I mean,
Basically, you're welcome.
welcome to Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism Podcast. We are Jen, Kim, Rachel, and Jamie. Take a seat at our table as we share with hope, humor, and honesty.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. We are very excited because we have a special guest. Tabitha is here.
Yay!
Woohoo! Bow, bow, bow. Hi, Tabs.
Hi.
Hi, Tabs.
Hello.
Thank you for coming on with us. So the reason we have Tabitha on is we are starting a new series, and it's called Parenting Autism. And we thought we would give our perspective as being parents to kids and adults who are neurodivergent. And we are starting off with parenting autistic daughters. Our little group is a little unusual in that there are
Hear,
more
hear.
girls. There are more girls on the spectrum of our children than boys. I do not have a daughter with autism, but everyone else here does. So that's why I'm hosting. Anyway, so I thought we'd each go around the table and you guys could say a little bit about your daughters, their age, likes, challenges, whatever details you want to give, but just a quick go around so we have a basis for anyone new listening who your kiddos are. Thinking we go youngest to oldest. So start with you, Tabs.
Yeah, so my daughter Nora is 5, turned 5 in December. She was diagnosed 4 days before her second birthday, which is pretty early in the girl landscape of things. She has more classic autism checklist boxes than her brother does, so I think that was part of the reason. And she's nonverbal. So that played a big factor in her diagnosis. She's technically diagnosed level 3 nonverbal severe autism. No other diagnosis. She does have some sleep stuff, as in, no, we don't.
As in, we
Girls
don't
on the
sleep.
spectrum don't sleep.
Welcome back to the table, Tabs. That's not changed. Not changed.
And people give me suggestions on what we should do. The other day we were up at 12:46 for the entire day, so that was cool. I always say she's fierce to her core, both on both sides. So things that she loves is like highly intense, and things that she dislikes also highly intense. She's very smart. I mean, when you're talking about girls on the spectrum, I think there's a lot of like flexibility and mobility and climbing and swiftness and figuring out locks and climbing inside places, and they keep you on your toes for sure. So she's just like a fierce little package in her whole entire being. Her loves are she loves horses and nature and sand and sensory and movement and her brother and us, you know. So she loves it. You can usually settle her spirit if you go outside, which is tough in the Montana winter, but she also loves snow, so I mean it kind of works out for us. So it's
Not
not
for
a
you.
need.
You don't love the snow, but
No,
she loves
I do
it.
not
How
like
about you,
snow.
Rachel?
Zeely is 9. She loves art and makeup and water and mermaids. She loves playing with friends, which I'll explain a little later. What that looks like for her. She's always been really busy and curious. She's brave and determined. She has a wicked low frustration tolerance, and her skill scatter makes her disability obvious to someone who knows what they're looking at. And we pretty much can swindle anybody that does it for a good short minute. So she's a complex bird, and I would say fierce fits her too. I often say she's a hellcat. She's just fierce and just bold. She is like life at 1,000%, whether she's coming or going or up or down.
What about you, Jenny?
Oh, my girl who turns 14 next Saturday.
My gosh.
Wild, wild.
That is wild.
Kaya Alexandra. Fierce is a common theme. She is so funny, which You know, when Kaya was diagnosed at 2.5, she was nonverbal. I guess I didn't look at the paperwork or I was in full denial, but apparently she was diagnosed with severe nonverbal autism. I skipped over that whole other section on there. That's what she was diagnosed. Kaya speaks. She's slightly conversational. She loves soap operas like I did when I was a little girl. I mean, I think over COVID, she really developed a love for them, but she loves Annie like I loved Annie. She gets so fixated on certain things. I laugh because in one moment she's loving Elmo and the second later she's watching an inappropriate movie that she shouldn't have rented. I just mean like Lie with Me and Bridesmaids. But
that's like capturing girl autism in such a way I can't even. If this I, only makes know, the I've never outtakes, met another I want you to know.
Kid
this
like real. Her. You know, she
yeah.
does the typical fixation on things, but her memory is wild. I mean, she cannot cross the street safely, but she can spit my number out in 2 seconds, my phone number. And she's known it for years. And she doesn't ever call me, by the way. So it's just those.
And when she does, she calls you Jennifer.
Jennifer, yeah. That's my girl. She's a card. She's a really funny, funny kid.
What about you, Kimmy?
My daughter is Alyssa. She is 27. She's diagnosed severe nonverbal autism. She is a wild card. You really never know what you're going to get. She is stubborn. She has a great sense of humor. She's happy for the most part until she's not. She has had huge leaps and bounds with language and understanding over the past couple of years, I'd say the past 5 years, which has led to some increased control issues. So obviously with the autism comes the, you know, need for control, the rigidity. She's always had that, but it's kind of like increasing. And I think it has a lot to do with her awareness increasing. So things that she was kind of like, go with the flow about are things that didn't necessarily really like register on her radar, and now she's fully aware of them and she just wants to control anything and everything that she can. So that is our current struggle, but for the most part she's laid back, easygoing. She can be very stubborn, fierce as well. I always just say she's when things are going her way, it's great. When things are not going the way that she wants them to, she anticipates them to, or she expects them to, then as Rachel says, you got a Hellcat on your hands. So.
I was like, yeah. Welcome to girl autism, Kimmy. Yeah.
I think that
I've got true. One of those too.
Yeah, me too.
We all do. Here, here. Yeah. We'll hear the statistics from Jamie in a minute, but like to have 4 of us out of 5 is wild. And then they're all these full strength girls with a spirit that could just like take the house down, you know? Yeah. It is really something to find all of us, you know?
No one's hiding in the corner here. Okay. So yeah. So like Rach just said, I'm going to give some stats about mostly girls on the spectrum, but some of this will be just in general because it correlates. So 1 in 36 children, as we know, is the latest statistics, I think since 2023, of children who are diagnosed with autism. So that's just children if you think about it. And then that went up from the previous, which was 1 in 44. And we know over the last several years, every year, it becomes more and more.
It was 1 in 1,000 when Alyssa was diagnosed. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Yeah, that is wild.
And about 4 in 100 boys and 1 in 100 girls have autism. So boys are nearly 4 times more likely to be diagnosed with autism than girls. The ratio is 4 to 1. But other research has come out that they think it's probably closer to 3 to 1. And that's because, sorry, that rate's from the CDC. Kimmy already knew it. and the more they're doing research is they're discovering that a lot of girls are getting diagnosed in adulthood who had not been diagnosed in childhood. An article by Stat News, this article was specifically about why the autism rate is rising, but they talk a little bit about girls. And they say we're skeptical of that number, which has barely changed over the past decade, the 4 to 1.
I mean, that was same with Alyssa. I mean, yep. That's 1996, the same 4 to 1 ratio, which is like crazy that hasn't changed.
One hasn't changed, yeah. Even as the overall prevalence has risen in our academic work, we find that autistic female students often outnumber autistic male students in college groups. One of us is a social worker and notes that women in adult settings often come to a diagnosis later in life, frequently as mothers and grandmothers. This suggests that many females still escape childhood diagnosis today. And they just talk a little bit about how, in general, that number could be off because of that. And a lot of girls who are diagnosed as children are more profoundly affected by autism. And that's why, is because it's more obvious.
The ADOS, which is what they use to diagnose
criteria.
criteria was based on a research that was done on male kiddos, not female.
It's interesting because then you wonder, like with those statistics, is that because adult males don't seek the, you know what I mean? Like they've lived with it that long and they're not seeking the diagnoses and the therapies. Like, it's just interesting.
2023 UCLA Health. Experts realizing almost as many females as males may have autism. Recent studies show 80% of autistic females are undiagnosed until age of 18, what you just said, James. But it says girls may be hyper-focused on specific topics. I have one of those. And not participate in school to their potential. It's just interesting when you start picking down all the drop downs on the Google. I'm like, well, oh, there's another one.
Yeah, I think they usually get, most of the time they get diagnosed with anxiety, depression, or bipolar, or something else that is not autism.
And that takes away the attention from seeking autism because they have like these things that they're looking at. I have read that. But I just meant like where I don't think as many men are like have the self-discovery about themselves after a certain age. Like they're just kind of like, this is who I am. Where women, I feel like we tend to like to get answers and like analyze ourselves and like want to like,
especially if your kiddo's diagnosed, I would think.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's what I think leads to it. That's why I was saying a lot of mothers and grandmothers. And I wonder what that is because I don't have the rates on like how many men are diagnosed in adulthood versus women diagnosed in adulthood. But this goes on that there's an article from verywellhealth.com and it says autistic girls and women may not get diagnosed as early as boys and men if they are diagnosed at all. The classic autism traits do not always show up in girls. And that's the point that Tabs brought up is like, well, the classic traits are because they only studied boys.
Yeah.
And if you look at a lot of the research, it is mostly around males. Some girls learn how to cover up their autistic traits at a young age, which is called masking or camouflaging. And there are many factors that can contribute to this diagnosis. Some of them have to do with cultural expectations, and they give some possible signs that girls are on the spectrum. Here are some. It says relying on other people to guide or speak for them, having unusual sensitivity or sensory challenges, having a passionate but limited interest, challenges in making and keeping friends, having conversations limited to their own topics of interest, differences with social communication, which increases with age, choosing behaviors that seem to be, this is what I don't agree with, to be shy, quiet, or unusually passive, having symptoms of anxiety, or another concurring mental health condition.
I might have to edit my snort. I'm sorry.
Yes, the girls at this and table. And
challenges with controlling emotions and a history of seizures. So, I mean, for me just having a boy, all those things also kind of describe my son. But I think we don't look at those things as much as other things. And so if a girl just has that list of things, it's not as clear.
Yeah.
Also, I think when you're talking about a girl who's like also like more verbal and higher functioning, they are able to pick up on the cues that are like, oh, this is how I'm supposed to act. So they kind of do that where like boys, I don't think are always as aware of that. They're just kind of like,
which is just so a boy.
Even if they're mimicking, not necessarily that skill is there and like trackable, it's that they're mimicking that deeply. Sometimes
I will say that Nora is shy. I think she's shy in her way that she what people would consider her shyness isolation more than like she's shy with people, but it presents as in her own world or not being engaged.
As a mom, you see it because at home, you know that she's herself at home, and then when she's probably around other people, it's probably way different.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say even if you look at ADHD in a girl versus a boy, like typically. You're going to pick that ADHD up at a younger age and faster because the behaviors are different. You know, the symptoms are more present where a girl can have ADHD and it takes a little bit longer to really like see it because they don't necessarily, and some girls do. I'm not, obviously there's always going to be exceptions. I'm not saying in every case, I'm just saying generally a girl takes a little bit longer because those things they're not as prevalent. Like you can't always see it by looking at them because they internalize a lot more of it where the boys are like just zipping around everywhere and you're like, oh, but like I wonder if it's like a similar thing with the autism where like they're just able to kind of like keep it inside more as opposed to like a lot of boys don't really try to do that. They're like, this is me.
keep it inside until that lid blows off.
So I thought on that note, we'd move on to like our first discussion point, which is, you know, what are some of the unique challenges of raising a daughter on the spectrum? I know for some of you, that's your only parenting experience, but I'm sure you've seen how it's unique to others. And, you know, how just the idea of it presenting differently than boys, the challenge, if you've had any challenges with people, Rachel talked about this a little, people understanding that that is autism, or if any of you had challenge getting your girls diagnosed, and how that, I don't know, how that journey's been for you overall.
So for me, the pediatrician that we had when Kaya was a baby, I went from one extreme to the other, which I know is really shocking for you ladies, but I went from something's wrong. Like this, this baby doesn't acknowledge, like, something's wrong. To that panic of help her to, she's fine. No, she doesn't need an evaluation. No, she's fine. She takes me. I know what she needs. Kind of, it shifted that way. And I think it was because she was a girl and she didn't have the typical boy autism. So I don't think the pediatrician had any idea what she was sort of looking at. Anyway, that part of it was challenging in the beginning.
Yeah, I would say for us, Nora's diagnosis was quick and fast compared to her brother. I mean, her brother took a year plus to get diagnosed. And it's because he had more characteristics at the time of what they would consider like more girl characteristics, you know.
Jesse was the same.
Yeah, like he's social, he likes being around people. I mean, he had limited-ish eye contact. The language actually probably helped with his diagnosis because he had limited language until he was after like 4 years old. But with Nora, it was like we were in and out. They were like, yep, this is autism. You know, she had developed typically until she was 18 months, and then she lost all of her language, disappeared completely. It was devastating for me because we had been monitoring so intensely just because of Nixon's experience, and it hit me like a brick for sure, her diagnosis. But now looking back, she, you know, has all of the hand flapping, sensory, it, you know, sound, crowds, like fixated on very particular items in repeated play, like the list, go down the list, she's got pretty much everything except for toe walking. She's not a toe walker, you know, even looking at her hands. And when I go back and look at videos now, I can see some of that stuff that I wasn't seeing before, maybe because I was in denial and didn't want to see it, or maybe I was like so hyper focused on Nixon getting diagnosed during the time. You know, there's so many things to say, but her diagnosis, I feel like, was not a fight compared to what. And with Nixon, I was like, I don't know if he should get a diagnosis. I went through all of that. Like,
you were so much more informed for Nora's that even whether or not you were bringing denial to that assessment tabs, you knew in your soul so many more things from these discussions, from the community that we were in, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I didn't go to the internet because I already had been there many, many hours late at night, you know, like with
her. We were sitting as a table with three other girl moms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah. And as she's gotten older, it's just like clearer and clearer. You know what I mean? Like there's no like question mark at all as we've gotten older.
I think it's funny in general how you get that, because you're so, and I don't even think it's the denial thing or anything, but some things are hard to tell as they're littler. And then when they grow up, you're like, oh, yep.
Well, especially in when they're a year old. I mean,
toddler. Yeah.
Are they not turning because they don't want to? Like they're busy and they're doing stuff. Like it's so hard to differentiate like normal toddler behavior to like, is this a red flag? I mean, I see it at the daycare all the time where we're like, okay, this person might not be like answering their name, but like there's seven other kids in the classroom. They're all fighting for the same toy, like. So I feel like it's just not that apparent when they're in that, like, the first half of a year. Like, I feel like it's just so hard to, like, well, you know, that you're in denial, but it's just, like, they're so unpredictable and they're so different and they're developing at such different rates.
With her, the first thing that I was like, oh, here we go again, besides the language. Like, that took a while for us to, like, be, like, cued into that it was disappearing or going away. But she took all of the condiments out of the refrigerator. I have a video of this. She must have been less than, she was probably 18 months old or something along those lines.
Didn't she line them up on the stripes of the floor?
She lined them up, yeah, on the floor in front of the refrigerator. Every single condiment.
You're like,
God.
I was like, what am I watching? I was like videoing it. And she was like doing a little bit of like hand stimming in that video that I could see now, but I didn't see then. But yeah, just repeatedly taking all the everything off the shelf, lining it up in front of the refrigerator. And then I was like, okay.
It is the pictures, Tabitha, or the videos. You're right. Because I'll look back and she used to line things on the tub. Like everything was, and I'm like,
when you're at the assessment, you're like, no, my kid doesn't line things up. And then after you get home, every video you see, they're lining up the goddamn figures of Dory and, you know, everything. Oh my gosh.
It was like a, oh shit, and brace yourself. Like, what are we going to do with two kids with autism? And their autism is like completely polar opposite.
Because I feel like Nixon was this beautiful entry, like a gentle entry into autism. Not that it was easy for you, but just that it's like one shade of something. And then she's like a horse of a different color, like, and I'm talking Technicolor. So, I mean,
my kids are like what they say when you meet one person with autism.
But they're the spectrum.
Yes. Opposite.
Well, in top of that, I can really relate to this. With Kiara, obviously she didn't end up having autism, but it's like you're, and I don't know if you did this at all, Jamie, but like it's like you're just watching these things and then you're like, wait, is that a thing or is that, you know what I mean? It's like all these little things that they have, and they all have like these little quirks, all kids have them, you know, but you're like, wait, she's carrying two things in her hand, is she just carrying two things in her hand, or is this something like she cares to have a weird thing about like the car seat, like the armrest had to be down, or she like, I couldn't get her in the car seat, she would freak out, and I'm like, is this an autism? But like her thing just end up being toddler things where, but it's like you're
me
just
and
so
Jen
hyper
have only
weird.
Done this one time in this weird lane of life that we're like, oh yeah, what do you mean your kid doesn't fill in the blank.
You're just so hyper aware of it because of like what you know, and you already have a child that's on the spectrum, and then you're like, no, then you're like talking yourself out of it, and then it's like, you know, it's
I remember my aunt saying to me, Jennifer, why won't she look at me? Like, nobody, like she was 1.5, nobody, autism had not come across anyone's orbit yet.
Right up. Yeah,
I just remember my aunt on the ground trying to play with her. She could have given two that this woman is like banging pans beside her, literally banging pans beside her. Like, why is this kid not, what doesn't she like me? What, why won't this kid? I remember my aunt was here. And
the rejection just, was
the rejection,
rejecting
yeah.
people. Yeah.
Well, I also, like, I don't know if you guys with your kids, like gifts, people are expecting this reaction out of her. That nobody
I talk
ever
about
gets.
That all the time.
Even if it's something that she's so excited to get. She doesn't have the reaction that people expect her to have.
I literally have that same problem, Jen. So
I get that blotchy, turn purple throat.
I'm so terrible.
I am too.
Feely is more likely to puke about something she's excited to open at a birthday than she is to thank you and make eye contact. Be like, thanks for the tutu.
I will say thank you, but just because I'm like, oh, you know, like you're like, well, what do you say? But she doesn't care about things in the moment. And even if it's something that she loves, she needs time to like,
process.
Okay, we all know my kid has an obscene amount of iPads and she has names for every single one of them. And every time she gets a new one, she will not touch that new one until she's ready. And it takes a while for her to warm up to that new iPad that she wanted, by the way.
Even so in the like, case that she wanted, as the color she wanted, just everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's a little off subject, but I say this, it's one of the first things I ever wrote about was how adults put this expectation on our kids to, and all children in general, to fulfill something in themselves. They want to be like, their gift be the most love. Yeah. They want the most interaction from the baby. They want
give me a hug.
When you have a kid on the spectrum, you see how kind of gross that is. It's like the whole, like the uncle or someone being like, oh, he doesn't like me. And I'm like, why does that, like, it's a child. Why are you putting your self-esteem,
Richard,
in the hands of my child?
You, dude.
Whatever.
Also,
I hate it.
My kid doesn't want to be around you, creepy uncle. There might be a reason why.
She's got that tuned in radar.
My daughter likes like four people in this universe.
You know what's funny is when Jamie was saying about people, which I think is another thing about our kids, like you were just saying, Taps, like my daughter loves my brother. He is literally her favorite person in the whole freaking world. Like, she just lights up, she just loves him. But she used to love my sister-in-law that way. And it's like, it shifted. So like the competition between them is really funny. Like, well, who's your favorite? And like, they'll literally go back and forth. And she's like, you know, but yeah. They get their people. They have, yeah. Like, I have certain friends that she loves. I have friends she can't stand. So it's like,
I feel like anybody who tries too hard is just a no-go for us. Like,
yeah,
especially when she was younger. Like, she's like,
you're going to have a golden retriever or an angry pit bull. Don't come for me when I said the pit bull thing, but like,
you're so Siri right. That's made exactly a choice. What it is. I always say kind of like calm period.
It's a warm up period too, just like the iPad. I feel like you have to give it space. You can't be in their face. You can't be trying too hard to like be excited or whatever. But Alyssa also
likes chaotic people, which is like, it almost goes against what you would expect. Like she likes animated. How do you say?
Rachel Flanagan is the greatest example.
Yeah, animated. Rachel Flanagan. Yeah. And like my sister, Alyssa loves my sister, and she's just like an
extra. I got that preschool teacher quality.
Her boyfriend's mother, like, she's just very loud and like has this like super loud laugh. So every time she laughs, Alyssa laughs, and she's like, she loves me. Like, it's because you're so crazy.
Loves me.
It's because you're hashtag extra. She loves that.
She really does. And it really goes against like what you would expect. So you just don't know sometimes with them. It's like, and they can't fake it. You can be like, be nice to so-and-so. Like, they just flew in from here. Like, make sure you say thank you. Like, you can't.
We try to just walk faster because mine's not going to get nice. Yeah. Like, bye.
But so on that note, like, obviously our experience is very different because it was so long.
Yeah.
So we're going back 25 years, I think, at this point in with Alyssa. So one of the things that threw them off was her being a girl, because you didn't see girls diagnosed as much as boys, even more so then. Like, it just really wasn't associated with girls. And Alyssa was like social. She was affectionate. And we know that all these stereotypes aren't really accurate at this state, that they're all very different. But back 25 years ago, it was thought that like, if you were autistic, you weren't social. If you were autistic, you really weren't affectionate.
Yeah.
And Alyssa was very social. She was very affectionate. And she was like happy until she wasn't, just like now. She would get very upset, and she would have like really bad meltdowns, and like she had self-injuring, and her sensory system was just completely out of whack. But like, when those things weren't happening, she was the happiest kid ever. Like, and she'd want you to bounce her. If you blew bubbles, she'd just like light up. So like, these things at that time kind of went against what they thought. They literally told me early intervention, like, yeah, we don't think she has autism. Like, she's too social. She's happy. She's just affectionate. Like, she's not. She just does not fit into like the box.
I just think about that now, and it's so mind blowing to me, because I think all of our kids are affectionate. You know what I mean? Like, every single boys and girls on this.
Although Alyssa went through like a 10-year period where she wasn't affectionate at all. So like when she was little, she was, but then that stopped, and that didn't come back until she was like 22. So like,
No, but you know what's interesting is definitely affectionate, and I don't want to speak for your girls, but like on her own terms.
Yes.
Yeah, so like Kaya will quite often, if you ask her for a hug, which is kind of what Jamie was talking about, like these expectations on children. And I hear other people talk about, I don't make my children hug people. I want the kid to feel whatever, that layer of stuff. Kaya, even with me, will back in for a hug.
Yeah, Jesse does that.
Straight in for a
hug. Alyssa did that for years.
And I feel like, and I know, like sometimes I remember many, many years where she literally physically could not be touched. Like, she just couldn't handle to be touched.
And that's what it is. It's not that they're not affectionate. It's just that social systems can't handle it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even Alyssa, like, even now. So if I come to snuggle with her when she's, like, in bed, which she loves, she could probably handle it for approximately 2 minutes. It's like, she likes it, but she cannot tolerate it. It has to be in such small, tiny doses.
Worth it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And sometimes if she needs the comfort, if she's having a really hard time, she may allow like 5 minutes, but like, and
what does she say? What does she say now if she needs some affection? What does she say?
I need a hug. Even before she acts on it, her body will tense up. Like, I can feel her body tensing up. So it's
Laura
like,
does that too.
She wants it, but like, her body can't handle it. it's just, yeah. it's too yeah. much. Like,
and before he talked to, or once he started talking, now he'll say, okay, that's enough hugging.
Yeah, literally.
Let go, Rachel.
The other thing about our children, they literally have no filter. Like, children don't have filters, but I think as they get older, it's like, it's not as cute. It gets awkward sort of on certain things, you know? We're in that stage. And I don't want to talk too much about her stuff, but like, my daughter loves a boy. She, like, we're in the emergency and she's like, hold hands. Like, I'm like, you don't know what he's even here for. You're not holding this man's hand. Like, hold hands. Like, she'll just go up to people. So it's that boundary of.
It's funny, Jen, because I was talking to someone at her school the other day and they were like, yeah, because there's a developmental delay, everything just happens slower and takes longer to happen. So it's like, they kind of get there. Like Kaya is.
Oh, and she's there.
Yeah, she's there. And Alyssa, there. I noticed, like, I was watching the show Supernatural, and Alyssa was watching it with me. And I'm not even kidding. The guys come on, she smiles. And I go, do you think they're cute? And she signs, yeah. And I don't know if she really knows what that means, but her smile is like, she's liking something. Like,
she's there for it.
Like, something she's is appealing to her. I don't think it's, like, sexual with her. I just think it's more of, like, a...
Hey, big fella. Probably.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And we were in Texas Roadhouse a couple weeks ago, and all of a sudden her face lit up. And I look, and a whole group of boys was walking by, and they were like teenagers, older teenagers, like 15, 16, 17, I would say. And I'm like,
get it, Lulu.
Listen, you little
cougar. Now I light up in the nachos.
She's a cougar.
No, but it was like, it's just funny because it's like, I've never seen her have a reaction like that, but it like makes sense. Because everything with her is so far behind that, like,
move over, Tai Tai.
Yeah, literally. But so then our diagnosis process, when we got to Children's Hospital, and she had like a 6-hour observation, and the process then as you came back 2 weeks later, and they were like, oh yeah, she has autism. And I was like, wait, no, everyone said she didn't. You know, so that was a little hard. And I feel like Alyssa's never really fit into like the autism box, because for as many classic autism signs she has, which she has a ton of them, she has these other things that are like not really typical. And I don't know if that has to do with being a girl or just has to do with like her personality in general. I feel like there's a lot of like inconsistencies when you talk about girl autism, because people will be like, oh, it's so different with girls. But with girls that are severe and don't have language, it's really not. They have a lot of the same signs that the boys have, so it's kind of confusing, I think, a lot of the literature that's out there.
Yeah,
because people are like that. Oh, girls just mask, or girls this, or girls that. And it's like, well, no, my girl has autism through. There's no, you know, there's really no question about it. But she does have, you know, I think I just had someone message me today and was like, it was kind of heartbreaking. She goes, I wish my daughter was as happy as yours. You know, she has a daughter the same age as Alyssa, and she's not happy. She has like a lot of struggles. And I'm like, it's just, you know, I know that Alyssa's happy, but when she's having a hard time, I can easily forget, because, you know, she can definitely have her struggles, especially where it comes to like control and anxiety and stuff like that. But in general, I feel like she's, you know, relatively happy. I mean, getting through puberty, obviously that's a different thing with a girl than you don't have to deal with a boy. Outside of that, I feel like we're pretty lucky for the most part. Like,
Well, I want to talk about some of that stuff later, a little bit, the puberty and the more of the social things. Rach, did you have anything on the diagnosis?
Yeah, C was diagnosed when she was 4. And it was funny going to that doctor, she basically was floored that C had not faced or had a diagnosis by then. We left the appointment with her saying, she is severely neuroatypical. And I remember like putting it in the Google, like, what the Sam hell is this? If we had been more consistent with a pediatrician, like, we moved a lot. And so with that, we weren't necessarily like seeing the same pediatrician for multiple appointments in a row. So I could maybe check some weird boxes on that skill scatter thing, but they would talk you into waiting. And then I'd be with another doctor because we lived in a different state or whatever. So she was diagnosed at 4 with autism and ADHD. There was like a big, huge sensory processing disorder discussion because so many of her struggles were around sensory stuff and also communication. She is verbal, and I'm not sure if it's like this out of pocket thing or if it's a girl thing or if it's like, I don't know, the fact that she's verbal, but I don't know if we make it look quite easy when things are going well. I can't imagine that that's necessarily it, but she can swindle some people. I mean, again, I repeat, if you know what you're looking at, you can see her little autistic hands, like feeling uncomfortable, fingers next to fingers. You know, you can see that she's only ever wearing stretch clothes and loose t-shirts. Mm-hmm. You might notice that she's in braids because, or like all of these different things, if you know, but if not, she's just this kid with idiosyncrasies that has like drag queen eye makeup on. Does release her feelings like a can of biscuits though. It is like big feelings all the time. And I know that that was very like boy severe autism on this stuff when we were being diagnosed. It was like, holy shit, look at this kid.
I was going to say, Rach, you and C and Nora have both gotten numerous comments about their intelligence, which I think like more so for your sake, but definitely we've had those comments about Nora where it kind of like almost offsets their autism or something.
It's so frustrating. People are surprised almost.
Yeah.
But she's so smart. It's like the inflection in their voice is this like out of pocket thing that I'm just trying to say. It's like, I don't know. This like surprise and delight. Oh, she can talk so well. I'm like, shut the fuck up. She's repeating a YouTube video.
So often see it, like we've all talked about it where because she is so verbal sometimes, so often people kind of set aside what her struggles are because they're like, well, she's talking. Yes. She's verbal.
But if you know what you're seeing, then you can tell that she only has like a 2 and 3 volley on any subject before she's like, F off. Okay, bye.
Yeah,
she not just conversational. Can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny, you know, her diagnoses changed from that ASD and ADHD at 4. We added some mental health at 5. And currently at 9, she has alphabet soup. But right now we would say she has autism. She has bipolar 2 with rapid cycling, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder called RNAD, which is significant and sort of is another spectrum disorder that has a lot of like coexisting marks on that spectrum. So it's kind of weird for me to know what is what with her, but her constellation with mental health and also brain damage alongside autism makes her a horse of a different color. I think it's very intense.
She's all her own thing.
She's a lot of things.
So I forgot to mention this. The psychologist that diagnosed my daughter, she was her last patient before she retired. And this lady was old. And she, the ADOS they did, they actually brought us back an additional day for some additional testing, which just to be clear, I mean, she sat in the middle of the room and just fixated on a spoon and a bowl. That's all she did the whole time. And I remember like, come on, kid, all those things. She actually gave us a diagnosis, not even sure she had it because she was 2.5. I mean, it's to be clear, she has autism, but it's so interesting when you were talking about the diagnosis process, thinking back to it then, how desperately I didn't want her to be autistic, how I tried to manipulate sort of the answers of the questions and all those things. And she's sitting in the middle of the room, a spoon, and a bowl. That's all I think she interacted with.
That brought me back to Nora's
so relatable.
Eval, where she was basically just playing with the blinds.
Yeah, this one
for
thing,
like,
right?
An hour. He was like trying to do the bubbles.
The bubble or the beanbag chair was creaky. She was like, the sound, like you could just feel out of her body that she was like, make it stop. I'm like, oh, what's that?
About the whole diagnostic process, I just love how like, you know, you answer all those questions beforehand and you're like, well, sometimes they do this. And like, you try to like, I don't even think you're trying to rationalize or hide things. You're just like, no, but he does bounce the ball sometimes, or he does do this at home and then like, he'll probably do it here. You know, in your head, when you're actually at the point, you're like, okay, we got to get the diagnosis for help. You're like, oh, they're probably going to like do all these things. And then you go and you're like, oh no, my kid's just autistic.
Look, she's playing. And then they're like, actually, did she have what's called a fancy bread for breakfast? I was like, what? And then she's like, I'm like, yeah, do you read minds? What? And then they're like, and then does she go to the bathroom and it has to be on the right? I'm like, what are you talking about? So she had a fancy bread. She's pissed that they didn't have fancy bread, which is a croissant, by the way. at the playhouse, and the bathroom, you take a right to go out of the kitchen instead of a left to go out of the kitchen, which is clearly not where the bathrooms are.
Yeah.
Here's your sign, girl. Here oh is your God. Sign.
With Nixon.
Yeah. I was like, look, she's playing.
He was playing with something, and the guy wanted to change the toys, and I had my like work badge on that went, you know, back and forth. And so when he went to change the toy, I slipped Nixon the badge in order to shift his focus. The guy saw, I mean, I was doing it in front of the guy, but in order to get through the eval to make him not upset, Nixon not upset, to make it through the toy exchange. And the guy was like, oh, you've done this before, I see. And I was like, what are you talking about, sir? Redirection? I mean, I think this worked perfectly. He's not screaming at you. So, I mean.
Well, you know something? I don't know if they still do this, but back when we got her diagnosed, they had basically observed us through a two-way mirror. And they just observed us with her. And they had us play with some toys with her where they weren't in the room or interacting at all. It was just me and Neil with her, which they watched that first. And then obviously they came in and tried to get her to do some other stuff. But they were really watching also her interactions with us, not so like,
I think that's a better,
it seemed like,
I do too.
Yeah.
It seemed like they were watching like what she was doing with the toys, but that's not really what they were watching. They were watching like
her engage with
her and her reactions. Like, and then they came in and tried to do some stuff, and then they even took her out of the room, and I'm like, she's not going to go with you. Of course, the little witch went. Like, why did I always make you like a liar? Like, she never would go with anybody, but she goes with this like random person to like walk on a balance beam in the hallway. Like, I don't know.
No, they don't do that anymore. They just do the whole thing together.
I kind of wish they did, because like Tabs was saying, you do things as parents, you don't even realize that you're doing those extra things.
Yep. Because it's preset in your system to make it through your day. You just like do these things.
It's automatic.
Well, and at that time, you would tell that, like, for us at least, Celie was totally cue dependent. So like to her dad answering the same questions, she's like capable of all those things. But to me, I was like, yeah, but she needs you to tell her where her foot is, like before she gets the shoes to put the foot on, the shoe in the foot, the foot, the shoe. Yeah. Sorry.
It's like, you need to say this exactly this way, sir, if you want. Right?
Yes. Yeah. This is a riddle, a Celie riddle. Otherwise, she has no idea what's at the bottom of her leg.
So yeah, I thought we would talk a little bit about parenting in the sense of, for anyone who's out there listening who may have a daughter that was recently diagnosed or who's scared to go through some of the parenting challenges for a girl and adding autism on top of that. I thought we could talk about some of that since we're all at different age levels. So maybe some of those like social dynamics of like how the expectations of girls within the social realm of friends and puberty, hair, shaving, all that kind of stuff, like those practical things. How have you guys dealt with that? I know Tabs is at a much younger age, but they're not doing too much of that yet. Mm-hmm. But how have you guys traversed through all that?
Jimmy, you want to go first? Because you started.
Yeah. Okay. So Alyssa, with her, with different things, for instance, when she started developing breasts, she would not wear a bra. I honestly did not. I was like, she's never going to wear it. It's just not going to happen. So we started with the shelf bra, which was like, it's a tank top that has like a built-in bra.
Oh,
like,
she God, literally, that's where I started too.
Yep. Yeah. And she wore it. Somebody gave me one. They were like, try this. And I'm like, okay. And it worked. And I would send a sports bra to school with her every day. And every day school would try it. Every day school would fail. Eventually she did it. Eventually she wore the sports bra, and you know, it did happen. I mean, I would have bet my life that it was not going to happen. As far as like, obviously if you have a girl, you know, at some point they're going to get their period. We did a lot of social stories because she got her period. She was, I think, just shy of 14 when she got her first period, which is a month before she turned 14. So she was a little bit older. We did a lot of social stories, which is like written verbiage with like pitches. School made them. I mean, they were a little weird, but like I did it. I read them to her. They read them to her. And social stories really work for Alyssa. Like, as much as like anytime I've done them, I'm like, okay, like, I don't know if this is like registering, because Alyssa understands, but she doesn't understand necessarily words. Words are hard for her. She understands more by like observing and pictures and stuff like that. So the more words you use, the kind of less it seems that she understands, but they are always paired with these pictures. So we did those, and this sounds a little weird, but this is just what I did, was I made sure I left the bathroom door open. I made sure she saw me when I was taking care of my lady stuff. that she saw me changing the pad. And I'd kind of go, yucky, you know, and like throw it away. Like just so when it happened, it wasn't like a shock to her. We also would give her pads and like just let her like open them and like, you know, just kind of get familiar with them. That's something I recommend, even if they take them right off their underwear, just kind of showing them how to do it, especially as you know that it's getting closer. And she did okay. Like she did a lot of like, she kind of tried to wipe it away, which didn't really work out too good in her favor because you can't do that. But she's like, why is this still happening? But she did okay. Within like, I'd say a few months, she like pretty much got the whole thing of it. And, you know, now she can pretty much independently take care of it. The only problem that we have is like, she will change her pad when she goes to the bathroom. She goes to the bathroom, she sees that there's stuff on it, she changes it and moves on. If she has a time where like maybe it's a little heavier for some reason, and you know, like if you exercise, if you're stressed out, like there's different things that just make it a little heavier where you might need to take care of it before you'd actually have to go to the bathroom. She doesn't understand that. So she wouldn't go to the bathroom just to take care of like a woman's issue. She takes care of the woman's issue while she goes to the bathroom, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So every now and again, we run into problems where like, she may leak a little. I mean, Jen can talk about this, but they have great underwear now. They have period underwear. Like, Alyssa, they weren't around when she started, so, like, I can't get her to wear those now. But it's just, those are some of the things. Shaving, I honestly don't really remember. I think we just started doing it, and she resisted at first, of course, but then over time, they get used to it. And, I mean, I don't shave her. Like, I shave her at the beginning of the summer. If we're going on a vacation, I'm not, and she's kind of hairy of all four of my kids. I'm like, why does it have to be her? That's the hairiest. It's like, but I don't try to shave her every time she showers or anything like that. We do it more periodically. Obviously her armpits, we do a little more, but I don't do them all the time. I do them like once a month, and she lets us do them now. So it's very challenging at first, and it does take a while. We had a huge decrease in behaviors after she hit puberty. She really calmed down a lot. So yeah, that's just kind of the gist of what we did. I mean, now there's more resources. Now there's YouTube videos. There's a lot more that people can utilize to like kind of help them. Even if they're, some of the things I feel like you just kind of roll your eyes and be like, really? But like, it does help get the message through, especially for like kids that are, you know, nonverbal. I think it really,
I love that you go, yeah, she had some social stories made by school. They were kind of weird. But
really were. I was just kind of like,
but they just did have work. To accept. Yeah,
they worked.
I've talked openly about her, about puberty. It was a great thing for us. It's like the angst was released when it was peaked and over. Kaya got her period at 11, 9, 8, 9, 10. She's had it a few years. I don't know. People, I feel like she's 50. I feel like I'm 95.
Didn't she get her period and then didn't get it for like...
Yeah, she didn't get it for like over a year. It kind of,
she just got it the one time. Yeah.
We also did social stories prior of like body parts and what'll happen. But I got really lucky. It was, she's... This one she's on right now has been the hardest one. How many sleeps till it's gone? It's like, I don't... No, I said the one thing I can't tell you, kid. I don't know. You know, and
there's actually no formula for that.
Right. It's like on that. But she's typically really good. Like Kimmy was saying, we started out with pads because her therapist at the time said, you know, because I was like, well, there's these things called Nick's underwear. And she's like, they may not always be around. She needs to learn to use a pad, which was great. But then we went into Nick's underwear and she'll say, I need my Nick's. Like she knows they're great period pants. If people haven't tried them, I've tried other brands. They're not as good. I'll give the Nick's that. They are the best.
They even do swimwear.
Yeah, they do swimwear. Right? They do dance wear. They do athletic wear.
Do they do for adults too?
Yeah, they do for adults too. Yeah.
Nick's, if you would like to reach out to this podcast,
feel free.
Hey, Nick's. So they're great. They're just like people ask what they're like. And they're, it's like a very thin pad, but yeah, you can feel the bigger ones because they're for nighttime, but they're just great underwear. You don't feel anything during it. So it's good. It's a very thin, like it's a thin, like I'm surprised how much liquid that can hold. It's pretty remarkable.
And you just wash it, right?
Just wash them, throw them in the washer, wash them and dry them. They're great.
It's pretty fantastic.
They're expensive, but they're worth it. I mean, she only uses them 1 week out of the month. It's great. Great investment. So for her, I really feel like the period helped with that sort of angst. Yeah. As far as shaving, I do shave her underarms every few days. Her dad's Italian. This girl is hairy. Like, she is hairy. So I do her armpits every few days, but she's very sensitive skin. And so she'll quite often get these like almost sores. Her legs, oils. My God, they're hairy, but she absolutely hates when I shave her legs. She gets so anxious and angry over it that I really only do it if I need to, if we're going on vacation and she's going to be in a bathing suit. Her birthday's this weekend. I'm probably not going to shave her legs because I don't care. She does, like, no one's really going to see. It's not outside. You know, I feel like she's at that age where she has to be socially, I hate to say acceptable. I don't mean it like that, but she is 14. Girls don't have thick, hairy legs at 14. I feel like it's another thing someone could look at her for, if that makes sense. So I shave her in those social situations because it is kind of what is.
And that's the same thing. Like, we do it in the beginning of the summer, and then, like,
yeah, so for things like that or something. Yeah, but she does needed. Not like her legs. I don't know if it's a sensation thing, a sensory thing. It really physically bothers her when I shave her legs.
And let me tell you,
it's a lot of hair. It's like taking it off and then doing another round. I don't just wait unless I really need to.
Well, this is hairy, but like, it seems to just only get so hairy. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't like continue if like it just gets to a certain point. So we're the same way, Jen. Like, in the summer, we usually do it in the beginning of the summer, or if she's going to be like going to a pool or going on vacation.
Yeah.
Or
something.
Oh man, this is stressful.
It's going to be good. It's going to be great, like, Tabitha.
Oh my God. In order to do a pad, my kid has to wear friggin' underwear. Can you put a pad into leggings? Is all I can think. Like, straight onto the scene.
They make those too.
Lord of mercy. Our problem. Well,
and there's like a certain point. Like, I guess you don't have this, Rachel, as much, but like with Alyssa, like, she has a brother that's 3 years older than her. So like, at a certain point, we had to teach her to cover up. And believe me, she was just like,
oh my
Nora,
God. I've got a full out and missed only child.
We got her to the point where we had underwear on her most of the time, but like, she would sometimes take them off, or like, you know, she used to take 5 tubs a day. So every time she took a bath, she'd be running out naked. But we got to the point where we had to just get her at least in a brown underwear. Like, and it did. It took a while, but like, she eventually got to the point where like, she could do that. So she still doesn't have like the social, like, she was doing it the other day, but I swear
free
she knew
spirit.
It was about
her. The other day I got out of the shower and I was trying to dry my back, Kim, and I had my towel kind of on like a cape, and all I could think is like, Lou would just run down the hallway right now.
Yeah, she used to do that.
You should do it.
So she used to do
I'm tempted.
So she did do this thing forever where like she'd wear a towel, but she'd wear it the long way, like a cape, and she'd run down the hall like completely naked in the front. And and I don't care how big of a towel I bought her, because I bought her huge towels. So like, she still would do that. My sister bought her a bathrobe. Now, I've tried to buy her bathrobes in the past. She was not having it. My sister bought her a bathrobe. It has a little crown on it, and my sister always calls her the queen. Don't even ask me how this worked, but she now, every time she takes a shower, she wears that bathrobe.
The queen.
But the other day she was kind of having a little fit about something, and she kept opening. I swear she knows what she was doing. And we're like, close that bathroom. So she'd close it, and then she'd go and like open it. But she doesn't have any sense of like, she knows that she's not supposed to, like, she would know in public, like, if she was going to do something, she knows not to do that. But like,
yeah, but that's a, I don't like, think that's she really, a rule she knows, not because she cares that somebody's seeing her.
Or like, I don't think she understands like body inappropriateness, like she doesn't,
because
like,
there's no gauge for like, I've heard people in other foreign countries talk about this, how they don't put their little girls in bathing suit tops because it's not like sexualized the way that we sexualize it. Not that we're
but
sexualizing,
she's scarring
children, but...
all the men in the house because they're like
but they don't have that concept of it being like inappropriate sexually to like flash whatever body parts. It's just body parts to them. It's not like connected,
because it's the same. They look the same as a boy up until they don't, you know.
Like Nora, we were at the hot springs, and this lady walks into the changing room. She's in a swimsuit or whatever, but Nora likes to like jiggle my thigh fat or my belly fat. You know, she thinks it's real sensory jam, fun time.
The filling.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. I'm just like, thanks for putting that. But this lady walks into the locker room, this poor lady. And Nora just happens to be right in her walking space, and Nora just gives her thighs a good old jiggle smack. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry about that, but she really just loves the way that.
That is hysterical.
Those are the moments. Don't you wish you had like a business card printed that's like, this is the situation? Because I can't cope with that lady and her thighs. I just need to get my daughter. That's what I said.
So nice.
I
don't, she was so nice.
I don't talk about it. I just walk faster.
She was like, it's no problem. I'm like, it's just your beautiful thighs. She just is admiring them.
But see, I think these are the things that we run into with our kids is like, if that happened when Nora was 8, that person might be as understanding, right? Because it's like, I feel like people just accept things from little kids that they, you know. Because they're little and they're younger.
Yeah.
We're it's already, hard.
We're already getting to that point with Nora where you can feel the shift coming. And I felt that with Nixon too, where it's like a certain age is unacceptable. And even now, some of the stuff with Nixon, like his shouting or vocal stims or running in public, like it's much more obvious that people are disapproving of.
Yeah. That. Like, in what is he, 7?
Yeah. Almost 8. Almost
that's like, right, and July. That's where I really feel like the shift is like it's like 6, like 5, 6. It's still they're still kind of little, but like I feel like something about like the age 7 that it's like you know they're out of like the kindergarten preschool kind of like realm, and people just like you know, and obviously, especially with Nixon, he has speech, so like they're also probably hearing him like talk, so that's automatically not making them as aware that there's.
And he's
you know
huge.
Something else going on.
He's huge too. He looks older than he actually is. But I feel like with a girl specifically, like the nakedness or the free spirit it pairs with the sensory need and the sensory system. You know, like there's just so many sensory needs with girls. It's
well, like and even when we got Alyssa to wear clothes, like so she'd be like out. We had a small front yard that was fenced in that, like you could if you went out of our living room, you just went right into this yard. She couldn't get out. So she'd be in and out of that a lot. But, like, she'd be outside and her clothes could get wet. She'd just take her clothes off.
Oh, Nora.
So I would come to the window and I'm like, shit, she's naked. I'm like, get in here.
Yeah, but that could be at the grocery store parking lot. You know, I mean, it could be anywhere.
The second Kaya steps out of the pool, we have a pool. The second she's – and my nephew is 16 and Kaya loves all the boys. But she doesn't do it for this, just to be clear. The moment that foot gets out of the first step of the pool, she strips down. And I remember I had to go to the bathroom. I said to my brother, remember – to grab her, like, get ready.
Cause the moment. Yeah.
And he wasn't quite ready in the moment. And my daughter was a naked in the moment. He's like, it was like a second. I go, you weren't fast enough, man. So, hey, hello, everybody. I
so mean, what are you going to do? Just get a towel ready for her?
Just get a towel ready or stop her at the, like.
Obviously, hey, you need a cabana boy.
Yeah.
It's like very obvious to me.
And again, well, she's
she also needs a queen 14. Bathroom.
Like queen a bathroom, yeah.
Woman,
yes,
fully developed.
You can't stop it. You can't stop the naked.
No. I mean, stop it, man.
You can't stop the taking off of the clothes. They're so wicked fast. My daughter can take her clothes off in 30 seconds. Clothes, not
and
clothes.
And it is. What happened? It's a distinct challenge that we have because when Alyssa gets this is very distressed. This isn't like normal distress. She'll pull at her clothes. She did it at Disney because we went to the water park and, of course, freaking Florida. It was like a thunderstorm with no rain. Ugh, so, like, there was thunder Florida. And lightning. So they had to be, I forget what it was. They had to be open for, like, they had to be closed for, like, an hour or something after each lightning strike or something like that. But we were there for 2 hours and, like, we couldn't do anything. So we're like, let's just leave and we'll go over to Magic Kingdom because at least some of the indoor rides would be open. And of course, Alyssa doesn't understand because she's like, there's no rain. Why are we not? We're at a waterside park. I'm in a bathing suit. Why is nothing happening? And then we were like, okay, we're going to leave. And she freaked out because she just didn't understand. And she was like, only in a bathing suit. So now as she's pulling at her clothing, well, she's only in a bathing suit. So you can just imagine. And I think that she was like 22 when this happened. So I'm just like. And she was screaming at the top of her lungs on top of it. I'm like, we're going to get arrested.
With a streaker.
like she wasn't taking it off. She was just, it's like she's just so distressed that she's just, so she's pulling at her top. But like, I mean, she has big boobs. So it's like, we're just like, oh my God. You don't have to worry about that part with a boy, you know, because they can be without a shirt. That's totally fine. There's
less parts you have to cover up.
The world just exists. I mean, there is another part that I'm glad that we don't have to deal with.
That also can be a problem with boys.
And can be shown. I've got friends whose kids show that too.
Oh, my yes. God.
One of the things for Celie, for us, is like something that we're trying to expose her to, like the idea of pads or, you know, a hygiene stuff or whatever, because she's not yet gotten her period, but she has dealt with some weight stuff. So she was developing for a bit and then lost a bunch of weight. Anyways, we're back to no bra right now. But she can learn something and it just turns to Bible. So we have to use the real words. We have to like be super frank and maybe even like beyond her maturity for things, because we might not get a chance to reframe that. For instance, if I let her call tampons purple markers, because my applicators when I had a uterus were like purple, she'd be asking a nurse in 4 years to get a purple marker for her period. You know, like we had to fix all of these things because it just becomes part of her rigid script about stuff. So for us, I'm sure we'll fall back on a skills worker. We've done that a lot during like times of transition, like great transition or growth or whatever, but it's, you know, we have to like lean in. These are your labia. This is what's going on here. This is a tampon. It's inserted this way. This is what's going
so
on.
Hard. Yeah.
Give the direct.
Yeah. Too. She's like a girl looking at the map inside the box of the tampons. Like, where do you put this? What's going on?
I bet she'll wear a bra. I bet she'll wear one. Cause Kaya
she did. Yeah. She loved a bra.
Kaya loves wearing a bra. She always has. And Kaya has, she's developed early. She's there. And so we went right to a sports bra, right into whatever. I think it's a compression that she likes.
Because
around her period, obviously your breasts get sore. She always wants to sleep in it. And I think it's because it's the compression.
I like it too. I like these.
I don't know. I mean, knock on wood, if there's, you know, I think having a girl in general, but when you have a child with autism and you're going through puberty and periods and boy stuff and appropriate behavior, it's so hard because
it's more unknown. You
know, the understanding sometimes of what's appropriate and what's not, it comes into those social situations. Yeah. Like, and hold my hand. I mean, she's literally asking a man to hold her hand. Like, and she wants that man to hold her hand.
when Kim was saying earlier that somebody described Alyssa's strengths and struggles to her as in like, everything might come. It's just going to be at her own time. Like things are going to whatever. That has nothing, you know, as moms, we talk a lot about like all these layers. It's not just mental health. It's not just my role as a mom. It's not just whatever. For our kids, it's like one set of development on top of hormones developing, like those go with their own clock. My kid, or, you know, you might be like interested in bridesmaids, also have Elmo, also have a need for a pad, you know, like it's this odd layer. Conundrum of time, you know?
Yes. I was going to say the same exact thing. Like, we obviously haven't been in the puberty. Thank God. Ugh, it's going to be a nightmare. But we just did the potty training, right? And we had tried that 4 or 5 times before it actually clicked. And then once it clicked, it was like, okay, we're potty trained. That's it. That's all she wrote. But I feel like with autistic girls, sometimes it's like, no. And then it's a yes. You know, like, it's like, we're not doing that. Nope. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, cool. We're doing this.
They have to A, do it on their, decide they're going to do it. And B, they just have to come around to the idea. And it just takes some time, you know?
I feel like Celie has some perfectionism in there. So like, she absorbs what to do. She watches you do it. And then she like, I swear to God, she like practices in the dark. She shows up with this whole skill, you know?
Yeah. Well, the other challenge that, I mean, I don't think this is just for girls. This is for, I think, all people that have, you know, autistic kids and stuff like that. I mean, I think Rachel was talking about this the other day, where it's like things happen with Alyssa. So things become a thing. Like something can happen once, twice, three times. Well, now it happens every day.
Yep.
And on the flip side of that, things can unbecome a thing very quickly. So if you like don't do something or don't have them do a routine that you normally do, or you know, kind of let something slide for like a certain amount of time, sometimes like Alyssa won't go back to it. Like, it's so like these things are just so challenging because you cannot, like, if Alyssa decides that something's a thing, then it's a thing.
Yep.
Like right now, she cleans out our car every single day. She goes outside. I don't care what the weather is. She has this, she wears this exact same jacket, this blue jacket. That's actually her dad's that he got her as a gift that he's like, I'm not going to wear it. And I got her these boots because she keeps wearing Lexi's boots and she keeps crushing the heels. Lexi gets mad. So I'm like, I'm going to buy her own boots. Even if she just wears them around the house. Nope. She wears them out to the car. My husband likes to go to the flea market. Anything, he never brings stuff in. I think he doesn't want me to see how much stuff he's getting. She comes in, she brings all his treasures in. She brought like a bag. He goes, oh my God. He goes, that bag is so heavy. There's tools in that. She brought that right in the house. If you if you leave like groceries in the car, like I don't care what it is. And she has to do this every night. But now one Saturday afternoon, she got up. My car wasn't here. So now she's distressed because she wants to go into the car. Mm. I was like, I don't even know how this became a thing. Like, how did this even happen? God. Like, I have no idea. Like,
it's that just has like, to be the next shirt. I don't even know how this became a thing.
Became a thing.
Yes. Oh, my God. So yeah. I think that a lot of these things are about autism, not necessarily about girls. But I do think that for our girls, there's like a certain way to lean on the skill scatter that like, holy mackerel, we've got a lot of things in common with these ladies. You know, I will say, knowing all of our girls for the past 3+ years so intimately, Tabs, there's this time when you're in Phoenix, you could not meet her insatiable need for sensory input. There was not a swing big enough. There was, or fast enough. There was not like a brother that did the right thing. She needed you to take the like baby corral pen.
Oh yes.
Flat like a dock. And then she ran over it so that it slapped the tiles every time. And I'm like, oh my God, that's my daughter. Like,
yes.
Just this insatiable need, this quest for like.
She walked on that hundreds of times, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That was during COVID. Yeah.
But well, for each of us, I feel like there's these things that are like, oh man, me too. Oh, yeah. That's in each of our kids, you know.
I can see Nora in all of your girls. All of your girls. Yeah. Every single one of them.
Well, I was just going to say, and I've said it before, Nora reminds me so much of Kaya when she was little.
Yeah.
So much.
And she's Alyssa busy. And Siri.
You just like, just like from one thing to the next.
I always say like, yeah, Nora's Alyssa's spirit animal.
Yes.
Like, I don't know. But yeah, there's just a wavelength that is so similar. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's lots of differences too, but there's just.
Yeah. And it's like the slamming of the cabinets to get your, like, hey, attention. It's right here, lady. It's in this cabinet. You know, Alyssa did that. But the movement with Seely, and I think the movement with Kaya too, like in different ways. Seely's movement and Kaya's movement combined is like Nora's jam right now, you know, like mixed bag of the two of them. I can see it so much.
And we didn't have, like, you couldn't buy swings for your house. Like, there was no Amazon when she was little. There was no, you know, you could, Martha. We used to have to do that shit by hand. So we used to have to take her and physically bounce her. It's probably why I have, like, disc issues. I'm physically bounce her like up and down, like on the floor. Like you had to physically bounce her up and down, and she would just be so happy, and it would really like it would really calm her down. We'd have to take turns doing it because like she did not want you to stop. It's like we were human freaking swings.
Nora's worn out my couch, the leather on the couch from jumping in this one spot over and over and over again. And I know where it is. Here for like 2 years.
On the back side of the middle cushion with her arms on the bar. Yes, yes.
Could you jump around a little more? Yes. Spread it out.
Jump on this one.
But it is pretty fascinating because there is a different vibration, I feel like, with girls who are autistic versus boys. I don't know if that's the right terminology, but it's just like a different
energy kind of.
I actually think girls, I think they stand out more than boys. And I don't know if it's because,
when you know,
they are. Yeah. I think, you know, right? Like, listen, I know you can't see autism.
Oh,
yes,
bullshit.
You can.
Yeah.
There are some clear things, you know, they stand out more than necessarily maybe a boy with autism.
That's what I was getting at with like the social aspect. I think it is clearer sometimes with girls because that expectation of them being a certain way or acting a certain way is harsher on girls in general. Like you're like expected to be more sociable, I think, at a level than boys. Polite. Boys can get away with being quiet or being distanced from other people, I think,
a lot easier. The bombshell energy that all of our girls have is not accepted for women, period.
Yeah.
Like there's an idea that women have to be put together. You can't get angry. You can't speak your
emotions. My kid looks like Spot from the Little Dinosaur movie.
Yeah, my daughter too. But I think that is
the good dinosaur. That's what
dinosaur
it is.
Yeah, Spot. Is jarring to our society's perception of femininity, period. I just think it is.
She's also though my like that chain that links all of our girls is literally like goals. Like a 40-year-old woman trying to achieve what my daughter wakes up with on a Monday, like the zero f's given mentality, the like, this is who I am. You're welcome.
Embrace Thank me or don't. She just, I don't care either way. Embrace
me. I did not say that. I can tell is very self-conscious. Where Celie's like, hey, just even the difference from the verbal aspect of it. And I don't know if that's why it seems maybe like she's more confident. Where Kaya, I feel like she's observing to kind of mimic what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. But in doing that, she kind of comes across a little timid. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Shy.
Like just sort of like not
Watch
sure.
First, do later.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's funny because Alyssa, now I can see that she's self-conscious about certain things, mm-hmm. but she's never had that before. It's with this explosion of like awareness and language and understanding has come like, and I mean, hers is in a different way where it's like, she's unsure if it's like, if she went to like take something and I was like, oh, what do you got? She'll immediately throw it down. And I'm like, well, what did you have? And she'll like walk away. Like,
like almost like, bashful based, right? Like, yeah, what? I don't have anything.
You just made her feel like, I feel like it's almost like she gets embarrassed, which I don't think she like knew to be embarrassed before. Like she was just like, there was no understanding of like what that would mean. But now we have the challenge of like that she's gained some language, but like she's still very hard to understand. So the other night, this is just a quick funny little story. I had a really bad headache, so I got some chocolate and we got a little sort of Kit Kat, and I had a Kit Kat and a Mounds bar. It was a bad headache. Do not judge me. So I opened.
I want a headache now.
Yeah.
So I opened the Mounds bar, and it was in four pieces. So I took a piece and I offered a piece to Alyssa, which she doesn't eat Mounds bar. I don't think she's ever had one. And she wrinkled her nose at it and she smelled it because of the coconut, you know, but then she took a bite and she was like, oh, actually I like this. And she ate it. And then a few minutes goes by and all of a sudden she's screaming. She's storming around the house. And we have no idea why. And all I could hear her saying is something too. And I'm like, oh, do you want a tissue? And she's like, no. And she's like, bah, 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 chew. Which was like the only thing I could make out. And then I'm like, what is wrong with her? And of course you're trying to figure it out. Well, what she was saying is I very clearly heard it once I understood it. She was saying, I want two, because I had the second piece of the Mounds bar of four.
Me too, girl.
One Mounds bar piece left. And she was saying, for her. I want two, meaning she wanted this.
The last one. Yeah.
And I go, oh, is this what you want? And she goes, yeah. And then she goes, I want two. And I was like, okay, now I can understand what you're saying. And I gave her the Mounds bar. And then she also ate her freaking Kit Kat.
She's like, I had a headache.
This is what you do. You have a girl. They're just like,
oh, yeah. She's one of us.
You better figure out what that is and make it happen.
Could one of you speak on it? Jen, you're really good about this. I know you've talked about this a few times, but just real quick, like for the moms out there whose daughters have recently been diagnosed or their daughters are younger, maybe how you've dealt with letting go of like the expectations of having a daughter. Like none of these things are guaranteed with even typical children, but you know, you have a daughter and you imagine certain things and how you've adapted those or let go of some of those like ideals.
Yeah, I think early on I used to write about, and I think everyone at some point has, grieving the child we thought we would have. And I've often said she was right in front of me and I was grieving her right in front of me. It's still hard to this day when you put her next to peers. I mean, it just shatters your heart. The differences are so grave, but I'm at a point now where there is some acceptance to it. There is, this is it. And so meeting her where she's at, which we hear all the time, but it is so true, and accepting that and then allowing to be able to enjoy that, I wasn't enjoying anything. I was missing everything because I was so sad. And I'm still sad. Truth be told, I cry every single day. It's never changed. I'm sad all the time about this because of how hard she struggles and seeing every day how little things are hard for her. But coming to accept that part of it, I think, has allowed me to enjoy the moments, if that makes any sense.
And I think,
and you've gotten so many, like 3 years ago, if you were asked that question on this podcast, Jen, your answer would be very similar. But you talked about all the stuff that you couldn't do experience wise, that you're like, you have a shopper. In fact, when she's in the mode, you have a chain shopper. Shit. Nail. You have like a girl that can go to a nail salon now with the right accommodations. And like, it's, I feel like disability takes away, or doesn't just take away, it teaches us to look for those wins, you know? And so while you grieve that what it could have been, I can see in you, even though you're still crying, that it's like, you're proud as hell of the new outfits that she picked herself, that she like said, I want a friend sweatshirt and like, I want yellow nails or this nails or whatever.
And there's so many things that people think about autism, but Kaya loves to travel, which is really wild. I mean, no offense, Rachel, because I'm really glad we're going to see you, but like, she is so stoked to go to Minnesota, and like, she's just all about Minnesota. And so it's like, I never thought we would do those things. Like, I really didn't think my little travel buddy would be my kid. I love, because you just don't think she's going to be able to do those things. And she's like a great little traveler to have with you.
I think what happens too, kind of going off what you said, Jen, is you do, you have these ideas of like a little girl, and you're going to have mom and me days, and they're going to do dance recitals, and you know, whatever it is that you have in your mind, which like you said, even with typical kids, sometimes they go an opposite way of like what you were kind of thinking they would do. But I think you just have to learn that you can still have these experiences, but they're just going to look a little different, you know? And yes, I got to have two typical daughters, which obviously helped because I got to have experience some things with her, but it doesn't take away that I still don't get it with Alyssa. Like, it's still hard, right? She was able to, now she's able to do a dance class. It doesn't look the same as Carrie's dance, obviously.
It is, and damn cute though.
Yeah, and she's able to get on stage and do a little recital, and we got Alyssa. She's only done it a few times. I've gotten her to the nail salon a couple times, and it really makes these silver linings, I feel like, just mean so much when you're able to have them, even though they just, you just have to realize that they're just going to look different than you thought they would look. It's not the experience that you imagine having, but like, you still get to experience things. They're just not always the same things that maybe we thought we were going to experience.
They would be. And I want to clarify real quick about the crying every day, because people would be like, oh, she bit her kid with autism. Absolutely. I would take it away in a heartbeat. Having said that, what I worry about now is so gravely different than what I worried about before. She's 14. She's going to be 20 soon. Yeah. She's going to be 25 soon. And I worry about her future. I worry about, when I see her in bed, I worry about who's going to care for her. I worry about who's going to brush her hair. I worry about the things that people that have neurotypical children never have to worry about. And people are like, well, we always worry about our kids. No, no, I'm not disputing that. I know all parents worry about their children, but you're not going to worry about your kid getting hit by a car at 25 years old because they don't understand walking safely. Those are the children that I worry about.
Or your children getting abused because they end up having to go to a home somewhere.
Yes.
And you have no control because you're not here anymore. Or maybe you're too elderly to be able to facilitate the advocacy that they need. And you hope that there's people in your place. Like, I have three children. I'm extremely, like, outside of Alyssa, I feel extremely fortunate. But even with that, I don't necessarily know what's going to look like when I'm not here. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen with Alyssa. This lady that just messaged me earlier said her daughter developed schizophrenia at 22. Like, you just, do you know what I'm saying? If something like that were to happen, I can't necessarily expect one of my kids to be able to take that on within their own families. It's very different because, yes, and I can tell you, I have four children. I worry about, my son's 30. I still worry about him. I still check his location if he's like going away somewhere and I'm like, oh, good thing. Okay, he got home.
And that's why I said that, Kimmy. Like, I know,
it's true.
Clear, you like do. All and parents worry about their kids.
Yep. And you worry about very different things. I mean, there's some things that I'm like, you know what? Alyssa's home every night. I'm not worrying about, did she go to a party? Is she drinking? You know, it goes back and forth. But when I leave this earth, I know that my children are going to be able to be on their own. They're going to be able to figure it out. They're going to be able to support themselves and live a fulfilled life still. We don't know that with our kids. Like, I don't know. I really do think one of my children will take her on, but like, you just don't really know what could happen with Alyssa. Like, she had some kind of medical complication that they can't handle at home. She may have to go somewhere. And that is, I think, the most terrifying thing.
Yeah.
It's paralyzing.
Try not to.
Any word I can use. It's, I think, paralyzing.
It comes in waves too. It comes. It's odd at the moments that it hits you. You know, like,
absolutely.
I went to the hot springs with my girlfriends this last week, and I had a meltdown personally. My kids did great. You guys would have been like, "How?" You know, they did fantastic. I mean, really,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's gotten easier over time, and you know, whatever. But I was with my girlfriends who have three girls who are all friends with each other. And I didn't realize till later that, which I told my friends this, like, I felt left out because I had little kids, and then my kids are going opposite directions. I'm trying to make sure they don't drown or like jump off the thing or whatever. We'd never been there before. Nixon was struggling with the air being too cold on his face, you know, and was on the verge of a meltdown. And then it was just a whole experience. But I just kept thinking about my kid. I'm going to cry. Dang it. This podcast always gets me to cry. I was thinking about my kids and relationships, you know, and it's hard to, like, we're in this beautiful location in the mountains and we're out there doing the thing and we traveled. We made it there. It's like a 2.5 hour drive. I would not have been able to do that 2 years ago. I mean, there's no way. But it's still like jarring to think about their experiences with other people as they get older, you know.
It just takes a couple little thoughts to like slip in your mind to like to derail you. You know what I mean? Like, and it can be watching my three kids together, which I love. They're all close. There's a big age difference too. And they're just, you know, they have good relationships. Yes, they give each other shit, but, you know, they sometimes they do things together. Sometimes they travel together. Then Alyssa's home with us. And like most of the time it doesn't bother me, but like every once in a while you go, how would this be? Like, what would this dynamic be if you could take away autism and you could take away the intellectual disability and like, you know, like where would she fit in with her siblings? Like, it's just, and it's not to say that
she is the older sister. She is.
So she's younger than Neil and older than Karen and Lexi. So it's like, she should be a part of that. Not that, and I'm not saying they don't, obviously they love her and like all that, but it's just like, she's not going to be able to go to, like, they all went tubing together. They all went to New Hampshire. They didn't go tubing. It was too cold. They were supposed to go tubing, but they went shopping, but they had a good time nonetheless. And it's just, it's hard sometimes because it's like, you know, and here she is just sitting with us. Like,
you think, yeah,
I don't sit there and think about it every day. I don't dwell on it, but it's just like, it can just come out of nowhere. Like one time it was just walking out the door. Which fills my heart. It really does. It really, that makes me think maybe I did do something right as a mom, because that's all you can hope for, really. But it's like, she doesn't get to be a part of that. That sucks.
Well, yeah. And you go down those tracks, those long tracks, like this whole hot springs things. Then I started spiraling into like, what happens when I get old? I have these two kiddos that
we just get like completely irrational.
Go off go all the way down 30 years down the track. Like,
she's five.
Okay,
she's five.
Every crazy day. Lady.
You're like, just hold my head into the water for a few minutes. Maybe just snapping
up. Do you have an ice bath for my mental health at the hot spring?
It's not going great here, people. It's not going well. And I was like so anxious the night before, obviously, because there's so many transitions. We're staying in a new place. I don't know if my daughter's going to sleep. There's other people there. Like, we're going to a new freaking hot springs. They've never been there before. We got to change.
And
like,
also, there could be a blackbird. I mean, who knows? The wind from the west, whatever.
And we did have a thing where, you know, Nora's doing so good with her device, but we saw the river and we're hitting swimming on her device. And she's like, there's the river, lady, right there. I see it. Then the river disappears because we're in the mountains. Then she gets upset because the river's gone because she thinks we're swimming in the river because she's never been to this hot springs before. Anyway, that was a long story. But then I spiraled down to the depths of the, hey, Tabitha's old and my kids are older. And A, who's going to take care of them? And B, the opposite side of that is I don't have neurotypical children. So what's going to happen to me when I can't?
In Minnesota, if you move here, Tabs, I'll just tell you the only solution I know about for that is in Minnesota, if you have a kid with a disability, they can move into the senior living home with you and then they can stay there after you expire. Boop, boop. Welcome home.
Or I just love you, Rachel.
We're on our way, Rachie. More yeah. reasons.
Welcome to the Flaniverse. Boom, boom, boom.
But I spiraled down this whole track of like their relationships in preteen years to high school. What's it going to be like when they graduate? Who's going to be able to live on their own? Then yeah. what's going to happen if they can't live on their own? Then what's going to happen to me once I can't live on my own?
Who's going to change my diaper?
So if you're there, if you're a newly diagnosed parent, just know that my kiddo, I don't know how many years we're into this thing now. It's 3 years. I don't know, a long time.
Three since diagnosis for Nora, four.
Yeah,
Nixon,
since we
right?
started the process-ish. But really, Nixon's been early in intervention just since he was like 18 months old. So we're in the autism jam. It's normal for these things to come up as your mm-hmm. life moves. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's different expectations of experiences that I thought I would have with my daughter versus experiences that I thought I would have with my son. Mm-hmm. And both of those are different than what someone with a neurotypical child is going to experience, period. It just is. It's going to be modifications. And then we come back from the hot springs and my daughter has Minions on. I got the jams going. She takes my hands. We're dancing in the kitchen. Like she's moving her body, letting me twirl her. Just a regular mom dancing with her daughter in the kitchen to music, you know? So anyway, you'll get these waves of hard spiraling that happen that are normal. And then on the other flip side of that, you'll be able to feel and experience these beautiful things to a different degree than someone else gets to experience.
Yeah. And I think you just learn to find that silver lining. You know what yeah. I mean? And it makes you appreciate these wins in a yeah. way that I don't think
other people appreciate
yeah. with a neurotypical child. Absolutely.
I've always said the lows are as low as they can be, but the highs are as high as they can be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those come swift and often.
It's and helpful when you have a full strength kid to remember that everything is temporary too, because you go yeah. through so many of those.
Well, that's the other thing too. Like everything ebbs and flows, right? And you know, the daily thing, I don't know if I'll ever get past having that moment every day of her life is so unfair. I mean, it's woe is me.
I think too, it's easier to come to terms with things when things are going well, you know, it's like things are going well. I mean, I've had weeks where I don't even think about that she has autism. I don't even remember that she has it. And then she reminds me. and then you're back down. Then you're just like, you just slide and back down that
but
hill.
It's like you said, you mean, it's kind of where you're at. Like, I was just
so hard to climb
up. We just went through all this other paperwork stuff for her. And the doctor's talking about, well, when she's 18, you know, then she's going to qualify for this. And then she'll move over into these services. And then this. And I'm like, 18. Oh, my God. Because she's 14. Yeah. And she's like an adult at that age.
I don't think it matters. I mean, yes, she is definitely growing. And it is crazy to have a teenager. But my kid is 9. And I'm like, oh, my God, she's halfway to 18. Well, in Minnesota, 18 doesn't actually mean shit. It's more like 21 or 22, depending on what we're talking about. Like yeah. Tabitha is saying Nora is 5 and she's like in the depths of despair, changing her own adult depends because her kids can't help her. it doesn't matter if you're
still pissed about 18
or you're not, because you're going to catastrophize the whole thing.
And
it's
you don't
just
know.
Part of momming so hard. And I
and
think
you
when
don't
you've
know.
Got these
we don't
full strength kids, it drives you there fast.
Sorry, Rachel, I keep interrupting you. You just don't know where your kids are going to land. That's the other thing is like, no matter if you have neurotypical kids or neurodiverse kids, you don't know where your kids are going to land and what they're going to be able to do. And our kids constantly blow our minds with their ability to shift and grow and change and live in a world that, you know.
And they're resilient. I mean, yeah. I mean, for all of our children, these kids are badasses. What mm-hmm. they, and I write about it all the time. My daughter walks into a world every single day that is not designed yep. for her. I get so annoyed, and I know it's really unlike me to get pissed and upset about things.
Weird. I mean, I can't even believe this.
I know, it's just like staggering breaking news. But like when I see these moms, and again, not complaining, but it's like, you have no idea how lucky you are. If this is all you're worried about, if yeah. this is it,
the right soccer socks.
I wouldn't have known whatever. Had this come across into
no,
my life.
And you don't know.
Right? So I try to show grace, but it's like your kid is so lucky. Your child is so lucky. And I actually thought about it again today. Like, what if I had another kid? she would have had a sibling, someone when I'm gone. And then I remember her dad saying he'd take a professional hit out on me if I got pregnant again. I mean, that's like, you know, weighing the options.
Yeah. Or you could be in my situation where I've,
you know, and autism, you know, my best friend Barbie always says to me, you know, you would have had more kids. And I said, I don't think I would have. Yeah. I don't think I would have. I would have been scared to have another child if after her diagnosis, right? So for me, I don't think I would have. But
and that for me as well, but I just got pregnant.
Kimmy just kept going and kept going.
Mine, I had to buy her after a 15-year wait, and it drove me to believe more in destiny, like this one and done, poop, poop feeling that I'm like, we're through. We're through. Well, she broke the mold. Had, we're done.
We had Nora before we knew about Nixon's diagnosis. Yeah. So,
plus you can't really do life like that. Like, we can't pick. I mean, this is what it is. It's like, what's that saying? And so it is, or it is so, whatever.
It's it
like,
is what it is.
Well, it's just like, it's already written. This is who our kids are, you know?
I know.
What our families are meant to be.
Yeah.
Something.
Well, people, that's girl autism in a nutshell. And we threw in a little extra on top of that.
To process, in spirit process. Of girls, a little extra autism and a little extra.
Oh my gosh. And can I just say, I miss you freaking girls. You girls,
I know, I was gonna say, it was so nice to have you, Tabitha.
Thank you for having me back.
I was really excited to see you on this screen.
I love being a 5e on our screen.
And it just, it almost just feels like you didn't even leave. It's like,
we just broke up. It was just like, coming back. Surprise, people.
Surprise.
I'm back.
We're just,
we left the number off the new name tab. So the option's always there for you.
Wait,
I got to invite her to more and more episodes. And then all of a sudden, we'll just be inviting her every week.
Yeah. And I'm out of my element because I just keep interrupting people. Podcast, well, I mean, rusty.
That's
people.
Not that different for us. That's fine.
That's true. Podcast.
Welcome back.
I missed all the listeners, and especially your guys' faces on Monday night. It's so nice.
You know what? I was going to say, we have this thing called One Last Thing that we've been doing, Tabs. Could I invite you to do a one last thing with us?
I'd love to.
Basically, you've got a minute, which is basically like 15 seconds to 90 seconds, whatever you need, to just vent, to deeply love, to add one last thing about the topic, to just whatever you need.
Life.
I can go. One last thing about girl autism that I, or girl neurodivergency, there it is, that I think is interesting is I recently was reading an article about my own, like I'm a 41-year-old woman. I was diagnosed in the third grade with ADD, but really like this ADHD whisper. And later in my life, I have had, as our listeners know, all of this mental health stuff come into play. And so as I was looking for some skills that I could use as a person who maybe thinks a little different or like, whatever. I was listening to this gal describe how she learned as an adult that she was on the spectrum and she can identify with all of these different things about her early childhood. But then in her professional life, when it was just her in a lane doing life as she expected after like progression of like education and then the career was all going well because she could keep all of the things in order for her life and lane. But as she became a parent and all of these things show that they're just all wicked variables stacked up on top of each other. And there's so many things compounding that. And for us, we're parenting under pressure, whether there's a genetic predisposition when your kids are like I adopted, but whatever. I just thought it was so interesting to describe life as a person on the spectrum or with ADHD in that way, to say like, I used to have all these struggles. I made all of these like adjustments to my own way. I lived in this lane and it was sort of masked. I was capable of masking. And then all the shit hit the fan. And now I have such a severe disability in so many lanes because it's all under pressure. I don't know. I thought it was fascinating.
I just want to touch upon also a lot of autism can seem really scary, like especially puberty, the different things we talked about, but it all just works itself out. You get through it. And then you're on to the next thing. And really, it just comes down to just loving your child and celebrating all the wins. Like, I think that is just like the most important thing, because there's always going to be hard and there's always going to be good. It's just a way of finding that balance. And that's with everybody, not just autism. It's just with autism, the hard is a little harder, but then the wins are, like we said, a little more meaningful.
What about you, Tabs? What's your one last thing?
So I'll say a couple things. I know you guys just did another nod to mental health, and you guys, all of our listeners know I had left the podcast in order to take care of myself and, you know, tune up this old brain I got going on over here. So I'll say a couple things that I've learned. I'm doing a lot of inner child work, and I heard or read about this research study that said the one of the main indicators of how children develop and feel about themselves into adulthood, the happiness of their mother, not the happiness of dad, not anything against fathers, but seeing their mother's happiness. And I don't think happiness, I think happiness is relative, right? When people are seeking or feeling terrible, the common phrase is, I just want to be happy, but it's fleeting. And, you know, finding moments where you can show your children joy or happiness in them, our kids, which we get to do to this nth degree, is pretty spectacular. So the phrase that I've been sitting with and learning to deal with that I've never done in my life is sitting in this discomfort, in this not filling the void with work or other things, tasks, goals, which is f-ing hard. I'm just gonna say, my brain does not like it at all. But if you can sit for moments at time in the discomfort, like these feelings that come up with our kids, the sadness, the hard moments, the reflecting on elevated feelings or your own loss or whatever the case may be, it gives you an opportunity to move through it to the other side of this like realm of happiness. So that's what I've been learning on my hiatus from this podcast.
That's awesome, Dubs. And terrifying. I mean, that's like, I'm automatically
horrifying.
I'm already in panic. I'm like, shit.
I'm like, oh God.
Horrifying. My kids are ruined.
So if you want a practical way you can do this, I do a lot of inner child work meditations, which is horrifying, also very hard. I also do EMDR, which is a very specific therapy meant to heal PTSD, which I've done in the past, and I'm working on inner child work with that. And then another practical way that you could do this by yourself, which is really disgusting and not great, but it's very effective.
Wow, that's so promising, Tabitha.
It works, though. It works. Turn off all your devices. Turn off the music. Turn off everything in your house and sit in silence.
But my brain does not stay silent.
I know, which is the
point.
That's
the thing.
Then you just let your brain run. And you can also journal if you can't.
That's what
stop
I do.
Creative
writing.
Yeah, creative writing helps. Or doing something that is mindless. Like, you know, I just repainted the caulk in my bathroom.
Caulking.
The caulk.
Caulking.
So these are the things that I'm learning. I am still on a very teeter-totter mental health situation over here. And it's in flux regularly. But I'm learning a lot about myself. So. Also, your kids, if they see you happy.
Mm-hmm. So reassuring.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, next week, you guys can join us for autism and anxiety. That's our next thing we're going to dive into.
Get it, girl. Get it.
Yeah. And we want to thank everybody for listening and have
thank
a great
you.
Day, everyone.
It's girl autism.
Thank Bye. You. And thank you, Tabitha.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Love Bye. You.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism podcast. If you are enjoying our podcast, make sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. And if you'd like to support us, you can become a subscriber. Just check out the description of this episode. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram for more content, and we'll see you next time.